powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, the Mariners pregame show is 2 hours away. That's starting at 3, first pitch at 4:05 in Baltimore. Robbie Ray getting the start. I mentioned the lineup just a minute ago, but let me read you through the full lineup because it is out. Jesse Winker leading off. He's in left field today. Was DH the other day. You've got France, Rodriguez, Crawford, Suarez, Frazier, Ford. Ford is your DH. Taylor Trammell in right field. Cal Raleigh, your catcher. And obviously, Ray, your starter. Again, first pitch is at 4:05 p.m. How are you liking Winker leading off, by the way, before we jump into this conversation?
I mean, so far, it's been fine. You know, I think it's been okay. It hasn't necessarily brought forth the fruit of Jesse Winker, you know, and his talent coming through. I think that they're searching and trying to find any way that they could possibly get his bat going and all that. But I think that he can play that role just fine. I think that he is a bat that, can work a count. And worst case scenario, that he's at least doing that. But ultimately, you know, you want your guy to get on base. you want Jesse Winker to have a high on base percentage, and he has been able to do that at times. But he's certainly not your traditional leadoff guy.
I'm
going to
interrupt you for some Mariners roster moves news. I'm sorry, nothing too surprising here. But Abraham Toro reinstated from the 10-day injured list with a left shoulder sprain, so he is back. Meanwhile, Kyle Lewis has been placed on the 7-day injured list. That's a 7-day concussion list. It is retroactive to May 29th.
Okay. All right. Well, obviously,
Jake's done with the show for today.
It's a bummer when it comes to Kyle Lewis. But look, I mean, this was something that Shannon Dreyer had talked about and braced us for. And it's just such a bummer, when it comes to Kyle Lewis. At least he's not going to be out for like a significant chunk of time. But any time missed for Kyle Lewis at this point, it's just unfortunate. And this guy just has the worst luck possible. I mean, just absolutely mashing the ball and doing well, and then he gets hit by a pitch that gets it that puts him on the 7-day injured list. I mean,
he'd be eligible to return, Kyle Lewis. Again, breaking news just a couple seconds ago from the Mariners. Abraham Toro reinstated from the 10-day IL. Kyle Lewis placed on the 7-day concussion IL, that retroactive to May 29th, which means that Kyle Lewis would be eligible to return in this next upcoming series.
So this weekend,
this series against the Orioles. He's done, but for the upcoming series against Texas, he's eligible to return that Sunday.
Well, hopefully that is the case and that you see him back in action. I mean, with Kyle Lewis at this point, like, you're just hoping that you can get, four games a week out
four
of him.
I'd be fine with four a week.
Yeah, I mean, I'd take it, right?
I mean, like, I would love more than that, but given the speed at which he's still recovering, and that's very apparent by his base running,
yes,
I think that that's fair to expect that from
him. Yeah, but Abraham Toro, so him getting reinstated, does that mean that he is right now he is activated to the roster?
Yes.
So do you think that you see any lineup changes because of this addition with Abraham Toro today?
Well, it'll probably be Ford.
Right.
Not for today. The lineup set for today, but for the remainder of this series.
Because Ford was who they, I believe, brought up to take Toro's spot when Toro went on the IL.
Yeah. Right.
So it seems like that might be the move that would be in place here, because Toro offers you a lot more positional flexibility than Mike Ford does. Ford is basically a first baseman if he's going to play in the field. More often than not, he's a DH.
Right. So I'll be curious to see what they end up doing, and maybe Mike Ford is a scratch from the lineup, and that you do see Abraham Toro. I know they just put that out, but you could potentially see that. I'm not entirely sure, but good to get Abraham Toro out there and somebody that can play multiple positions and can bring some depth for you. So, he hasn't had the start to the season that everyone was hoping that he would have. It is still a welcomed addition because, as you mentioned, you were getting pretty down into the depth chart of this team and of this roster.
All right, which Seahawks first round pick has made a strong impression in OTA so far? That coming up in less than 10 minutes for just a couple more minutes here. I want to get to some sound from John Morosi earlier. He was on with Wyman and Bob, had this to say about the Mariners' expectations.
I think we maybe overestimated them a little bit, and certainly if we could run the season back and if you played it with a productive Kelenic and a healthy Mitch Haniger, I think it's a very different outcome right now. I think we're seeing that, and if you had Lewis from the very beginning of the year as well, it's a fundamentally different club. They're close. I think they're still, what, 8 games under 500? They're not as bad as they look. They're not as bad as their record suggests. And I'll tell you what, if they are really a much better team than what we think they are, they really need to start winning series on this road trip.
So Morosi says two things. One is something he sees as fact, and the other puts the onus on the Mariners. He says, first of all, were our expectations a little too high for this club? Yeah, probably, given the lack of offseason moves truly that they made to improve this squad. However, they are better than their record. You have plenty of reason to think that they are better than how they've been performing in the month of May. However, this is where the onus is on the Mariners. If you're going to be better than your record, then you have to prove it. Otherwise, you are what your record says you are. And right now, that is a bad team.
Yeah, it is, unfortunately. And we all know that this team possesses way more talent than what their record shows. But as John Morosi said, you can only say that for so long, right? I mean, how often have we heard this over the course of the last 2 months, right?
That they're better and that you
they're
just
better
have to wait
and
for things to happen.
Got to be patient. You got to wait. You got to wait. You got to wait. Well, guess what? It's June 1st. It's June 1st. And it's got to happen. It's got to happen now. So it doesn't mean that they need to win every single game from this point forward. But in order to give them...
Well, it means they need to start winning some series.
Yes, they need to win series. And they need to be able to stack those series together. And it has to start now. You have to be able to get contribution from your lineup top to bottom. You have to be able to rely upon the starting rotation to get you deeper into games and to be able to keep you in range, which they have been able to do over the last, you know, 4 or 5 games. Give them credit for that. So when you start looking at this from that perspective, the team is showing you that there is maybe a potential turn, but you and I and Curtis, I know that we're not bought into it yet because you have to stack series wins together. And that is something that this team has not been able to do on a consistent basis this year. And until we start to see that happen more regularly, you definitely reserve judgment in terms of, you know, in terms of holding out hope that this team can be much like it was a season ago. And this summer is one that you are having a blast all the way through.
So I want to peel apart this premise just a little bit more. If you're going to say that this team is better than their record, then what pieces of the team are better than their record?
I think overall people are saying that their starting pitching is better than their record, that their lineup talent-wise is better than their record and definitely what they were a season ago. And sometimes that doesn't always translate. I mean, look at the San Diego Padres. They were infinitely more talented than what the Mariners were last year and also this year. And they still completely fell off in the second half of the season, didn't even sniff the playoffs. So sometimes there's bigger things at play here than just talent that is in your lineup. But if you just look at the talent and what this lineup has to offer, there should be reasons where you feel excited and optimistic about who these players are and what they can do, what they're capable of. And I think that's why people have continued to say, just hold out until this point. Hold out and wait. Wait till the summer. And the biggest player that everyone's saying that about is Jesse Winker. Wait for the summer. Jesse Winker just needs time to adjust. This is not who he has been as a player his entire career. And so at some point, you have to start proving that and
right.
showing that rather than continuing to be able to say that line because you're running out of time where, you know, your margin for error is getting thinner and thinner and thinner.
One pattern from their last road trip, certainly in that series against the Red Sox, but it reared its head throughout that entire 10-game road trip, which was the bullpen. the bullpen not being as good as it was last year, being a little more banged up than they were expecting to be, with Sadler being out, some other players not coming back here, Sewald really being their most reliable starter. You had regression for Steckenrider, and none of that's great, but obviously you were probably relying a little too much on your bullpen, which is a notoriously fickle part of a team, being great. Now, the good news is that bullpens, they're not like easy to fix, but compared to fixing a bullpen or improving a bullpen versus fixing an entire lineup, it is a little easier to fix. Like, you can add a bullpen arm at the trade deadline if you start getting pretty competitive. But is there another reason, barring a trade, that you guys can see the bullpen improving? Because that's an area where I would point to it and say, if you want to talk about they're better than their record, well, it's going to have to be the bullpen. Yes, Jake, you're raising your hand. I'm calling on you.
I know how they can get better without trading.
Yes.
How about Ken Giles gets healthy? Okay. How about you get Ken Giles healthy?
He's making rehab appearances with Tacoma right now.
Yes. So that is a positive thing that could be going your way. How about Eric Swanson? Where's Eric Swanson at right now? Who was one of your better relievers before he got hurt?
Where is he Curtis?
Hello, Eric? Where are you?
Eric?
He was on track to return over the last couple days, but that hasn't happened.
So we don't know where in the world Eric Swanson is. We will find him, we will locate him, and we will have an answer for the people. But if you can just get healthier in your bullpen, that would be a big boost to this group. Just that in and of itself would be a welcomed addition. Then you add on the fact that you have players like Penn Murphy who have emerged and have been better than advertised, right? Or been better than what maybe you were expecting them to be in their call-up situation. So if they can get healthier, if they can add Ken Giles, if they can add Eric Swanson, that would be nice for their bullpen. And the fact if Diego Castillo could stay on this run, if he has finally found his groove. If we get the good Diego Castillo, that would be awesome. That would be great, because Paul Sewald needs some help in terms of some serious reliable arms out there in that bullpen. And I know Scott Servais would really, really appreciate being able to have the lineup that he did last year of guys that he really felt like he could go to in high leverage situations, and they came up clutch nearly every single time.
I will tack on also the May schedule, and I don't want to make excuses, because I will say this until the cows come home. They should have added more in the offseason. That being said, they did have a really tough May. It gets a little bit easier in June. And so if you don't take advantage of it, you can no longer point to May and say, oh, but you played so many great teams, what are you going to do? I mean, if you don't take advantage of your series against Baltimore, who I know has good players, but your series against Baltimore, your series against Texas, same thing. I know they have some good players, but as a club, they are still evolving.
Yes.
If you don't take advantage and beat teams that you should be beating, then you can't really point to your schedule anymore. So that's how I look at June. It's kind of like, when it comes to prove it, it's like, well, you objectively have an easier schedule.
Well,
so
you've
got to have a better record.
Yes, you do. And let me give you this. So you have this Baltimore series, you have Texas, you have Houston, right? Then you face Boston and Minnesota. So three series back-to-back where you're playing against winning ball clubs, Houston, Boston, Minnesota. After that, there is a stretch here starting June 16th all the way down to July 3rd, where this team has an opportunity to make a massive run. They have a five-game series against the Angels, then Oakland, then the Angels, then Baltimore, then Oakland again.
I mean, the Angels have been really good.
If they can, but they're teetering off right now, right? I mean, it's still a team that you have to respect, and they're a good club, no question. But I think that they are cooling off a little bit. If you can get yourself close, if you can be around 500 by the time you hit June 16th, that is exciting. That would be a major win for this club. And then you could start to really gain some ground at that point from June 16th to July 3rd. So we're a long ways away from there in terms of baseball timing and everything else. But that's why we're talking about these series wins. You can't get to June 16th and be excited and hopeful about what they can do if you don't take care of business now with the opportunities given.
All right. This hour is brought to you by Mazda of Everett. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake. What personality trait does Clint Hurt possess? It's exactly what the doctor ordered for the Seahawks defense.
Well, I think there's one personality trait that Daryl Taylor highlights and makes very clear is a big difference for this team, and a reason why I think Seahawks fans should be optimistic about this defense looking different than previously under Ken Norton Jr., cut number 19.
To me, that's everything. That's something that you have to do. It doesn't matter if it's an established player like Jamal and Q Diggs or if it's a young guy. Everyone, coaches as well, has to be accountable to what's going on out here. They have to feel that standard. And obviously, as you teach the accountability part, you're teaching the entire system to everybody on the defense on all three levels. So guys know who is supposed to be where, who's responsible for things, who has a tough down based on the call. So there's a lot of teaching involved with that when we have the accountability part that gets factored in.
So when you talk about that, someone who is, you know, be there in, or wait, that was Clint Hurt, right? Can we go to cut 19?
Let's go to cut 19. I think his assertiveness as a coach, you know, and how he is as a person, you know, for, you know, just roll over into his coaching. And I think every day he's making us better. He's holding us accountable. You know, he's asking us to do things, asking us to get out of our comfort zone and make us better players. So I think his coaching style is great for our defense, and it's going to make us better as we head into the season.
So when you talk about Daryl Taylor, speaking about Clint Hurt, talked about his, you know, I would say assertiveness in addressing the problems, assertiveness in, you know, not letting things linger. And if there is something wrong, not sitting back and trying to be nice about it. No, we're going to address this. We're going to be blunt about it, and we're going to move forward. And guess what? We're doing this in a loving way. We care, all right? But we're not going to hold anything back, okay? We're going to tell you the truth. And in my experience, the best coaches that I've ever been around, they have been truth tellers, okay? Truth tellers, tell it like it is so that everyone is on the same page and everyone understands what everyone wants and the expectations are. Then they can be worked towards and met. If you don't know what the real expectations are, the real standard, how are you ever going to hit the mark? And I see that happen too often in coaching. And I think that Clint Hurt brings a level of assertiveness and being direct to the point where it doesn't matter who he's talking to. Quandre Diggs, Al Woods, or Daryl Taylor, Boye Mafe, any of the rookies. It is having the standard clear and set, and that if there are problems, they are going to be addressed. If good things are happening, they are going to be addressed and praised. There's no question in Pete Carroll's program. But having that level of accountability from the top down is so incredibly important.
Second down. What Seahawks first-round pick has made a strong impression this OTAs?
Well, I would say Clint Hurt getting a chance to talk about LJ Collier here in Cut 28. Someone came to OTAs in really good shape. LJ Collier, here we go.
Continued growth that he's showing now. You know, sometimes for young guys, particularly with defensive linemen, it's such a technical position. It takes time, you know. It takes time for those guys to learn things, to figure it out, to come into their man body, coming into this league, and for things to kind of slow down a little bit for him. So he has had out of the entire group of guys on defense, he's had one of the better springs out of everyone. So really excited for him and where he's going. Continue to be strong in the run game. He's came in bigger and stronger and faster than what he has been in previous years. Been rushing the passer really well, so just want to see him continue to stack days.
So as you talk about LJ Collier, can this transition into a new defense be a positive thing for him? It definitely could be, because you look at his flexibility, and the reason why they liked him when they drafted him in 2019 was the fact that he could play defensive end and he could come down and play the three technique position at defensive tackle. I believe this 3-4 scheme that Clint Hurt is going to implement will allow your defensive lineman to have that flexibility, and it is going to be a needed addition. That's why you brought in somebody like Shelby Harris that you're excited about, someone like Quentin Jefferson as well, who can move all across the defensive line, LJ Collier being one of those guys. So if LJ Collier in his last year says, look, this is make or break for me, came in his best shape, focused, energized, and can add to that depth of this Seahawks defensive line, that would be a tremendous, tremendous addition for this group, with a group that really needs the pass rush to be bolstered, especially from the interior.
Third down. What beautiful thing did Ryan Neal address that can help bring the best out of younger Seahawks players?
The beautiful thing? Well, how about the fact that you have completely new leadership and that everyone is trying to find their role and accept that level of accountability and responsibility? And instead of just having one or two guys emerge, having everybody feel like they're taking ownership. Let's go to cut 22 here.
It's funny, man. You know, my OGs, they know I got all nothing but love for them. And, you know, change is a thing that's always inevitable. And, you know, you miss them a lot. But at the end of the day, it's a new season. It's a new team. And you got to find that new identity. And new leaders got to emerge. And that's the beautiful thing about what we got going on now is that those leaders are starting to emerge in their own way. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be forced, and it's all organic. And that's the thing that you love about this, man. We got a group of dudes, young, and we all trying to find out what we're trying to find out. We're trying to find our mission together. So the quicker we find that, the faster we're going to move along.
So, yeah, they're trying to find their identity together. But, you know, as Ryan Neal talked about, the beautiful thing about all of this is that it forces everyone to step up. It's not just one or two guys that then assume the leadership roles that Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright once had, you know, in this transition. No, it forces everyone to have to collectively step up and everyone taking ownership of their own responsibilities. When this thing was originally created with the Legion of Boom, you look at that defense. There was not one clear leader. I would say Cam, probably, if you pointed to somebody, would be that guy. Mm-hmm. But Cam, Earl, Richard, Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill, right? Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright. There were a number of guys, a number of leaders that were very strong and that took accountability for the team and helped set the standard in the culture. That's just on the defensive side of the ball. Because everyone felt like they had a role and they felt like they needed to raise the bar and meet the standard and that they pushed everyone to do so. If you're Pete Carroll, you're trying to foster that same culture and responsibility to everyone. It's not just, hey, Jordan Brooks, this is your time to shine. It's Jordan Brooks, Cody Barton, Quandre Diggs, Jamal Adams. You want everyone to be in on the party. And if there is something that can be born of that, the missing the top quality leadership, that you could get everyone more involved, I think that that ultimately would be a very, very positive development for this team, and you could have something very exciting happen.
Fourth down. So, Jake, normally, I would say like once a week, we do this segment called Say It With Your Chest, which is where you say something that matters a lot to you, that you feel passionate about, you get fired up about, and you really just you put it all out there, and you let people know how you feel. So I actually wanted to tell you your topic, and then you are going to kind of take what you want from it and say it with your chest. So your topic is your kids playing sports.
My kids playing sports?
Yeah, so your topic is, earlier today we were talking about being parents of kids, and you're trying to teach your kids how to throw a ball or catch or play baseball or whatever it is, and because they're kids, they just don't. They just don't catch on too quickly, so you got to tell us how you're approaching this.
All right, we got T-ball tonight, okay? Jackson, we had practice yesterday, T-ball game tonight.
Yes.
And so what I would say is that we put in a lot of time and effort into learning how to get ground balls, how to perfectly set yourself up
for sure,
and throw to first base.
Exactly.
Now, they need to show the maturity at 5 years old and 6 years old to translate those lessons into the game.
There we go.
And if they can't do that, Stacey,
then what?
I mean,
you can't do anything.
I'm not the actual coach. I'm just a volunteer. So. There's nothing that I could do about it.
When we were
These are what I would call empty threats.
Yep.
So help me, and just do it, please, because I don't have an answer. There's no threat that I could give you, and I could follow through on.
We were talking earlier about you, Curtis, trying to teach Willa how to throw, and you, Jake, trying to teach Bodie how to field ground balls. Just being maybe a little too overbearing as baseball dads, just getting a little too involved there, a little too serious, and someone goes,
"Look, there's a right way to do it,
and there's a wrong
and the
way.
The other way to do it."
Correct.
Someone texted in; they were having a really hard time watching their kids' game, little T-ball game. Their son was digging a hole into the ground with his toe, with his back to home plate.
Oh no! Get your head in the game,
yes.
Son.
That's exactly what it is.
If you're going to do it, you're going to do it right.
All right, this or that coming your way in about 30 minutes. Don't go anywhere. This is Jake and Stacey.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, this or that coming your way in about 15 minutes before we get to that. Get it? Because it's this or that. So I'm saying before we get to that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay, well played. Nice job.
Thank you very much. The latest from Seahawks defensive coordinator Clint Hurt. Hurt spoke with reporters the other day at OTAs for the Seahawks. So let's talk about what the new Seahawks defense could look like. Let's see. Where to start? There's a lot to go over. Let's start with the cornerbacks. What Hurt has seen from the rookies so far.
Tariq's been working himself back into stuff. Obviously, I've never seen a corner that big and can run all the athleticism and whatnot. Smart kid, you know, and putting stuff together. Long and athletic. I think he's got a really bright future in front of him. And Colby has been on top of the details, learning the system, really smooth, athletic, and doesn't panic when the ball's in the air, which is a big deal today in pro football, obviously, with the deep ball and being able to play the ball when the ball's in the air. Guys are sitting there spinning in circles. This kid is very calm and collected and can play the ball, you know, when it comes his way.
Now, I don't know if Hurt is saying this, but it kind of echoes the sentiment that Bob Condotta shared with us earlier, which is that Tariq Woolen, who's the first player that Hurt is talking about here, has all of the athleticism in the world to make him a very intriguing prospect and to make it to where if he can show you anything, the Seahawks are going to be unwilling to release him for roster cutdowns because another team will probably swoop him up. But that it does seem like Kobe Bryant, their fourth-round pick out of Cincinnati, who played opposite Sauce Gardner, is probably further along in his development.
Yes. And you know what? I think that you're looking at a player that, as I've said before, the excitement is very real about Kobe Bryant. And it's really a matter of how quickly can he translate to facing NFL receivers, right? That, to me, is the thing that I'm going to be curious about, because the unique part of this is that Pete Carroll values practice and competition so much. It's honestly, it's a little surprising to me that you go through this OTAs where you're not really doing a whole lot of 11-on-11. And I think a lot of that has to do with taking care of the older veterans, taking care of some key players that are dealing with injuries. But you're not getting that many, you know, reps like they have in the past of going mano a mano against some of the best, right? And so when, you know, you're not going to get those answers until training camp. And so you're not going to get a real, you know, full read and understanding of who these guys are and who's going to step up and make plays until training camp, until the preseason. And Stacey, that's why it's going to be really fun to watch who takes advantage of that training camp and who is the one that's going to step up. Because Kobe Bryant, I just got a feeling about this kid that he's just got a ton of feel to his game and understands who he is. And I'm excited to watch, you know, how it plays out for him and anxious to see, that's for sure.
All right, Clint Hurt also stressing one of the most important things when it comes to transitioning to a new defense, that being what else? Communication.
The biggest thing right now is there's a lot of communication in and out of different calls and things of that nature, so you have multiplicity. You guys have heard me talk about that a lot. So with multiplicity and guys being on the same page, the communication at all three levels of the defense is crucial. If not, bad things can happen. So guys got to constantly talk. They got to be on the same page. It takes more than just when you're in the building of talking the schematics and the communication levels of it. It even has to happen when guys are away from here. If you think it's just going to happen in the 4 or 6 hours you're in the building, you're sadly mistaken. So, and like I said, they've grabbed that. You know, that part, we're farther along. Yeah, I was curious to see how they were going to handle stuff, and guys have really been hungry and attacked it schematically what we're doing.
Now, this is what I'm hearing. This is Clint Hurt saying, look, we want to be a little more exciting, a little more aggressive on defense. We're going to throw you some different looks to try to confuse the offense, and we're going to have guys playing different roles sometimes, whether that's Jamal Adams, sometimes being part of blitzes, sometimes dropping back, whatever it is. But if we are going to be more than just simple on defense, every single player better be on the same page, because if you try to get too complicated and if you try to speed up your development of your defense and someone, some starter somewhere doesn't know what's happening,
yeah,
then you're going to have a big hole in your defense and you are going to put yourself at risk. Because that's part of the risk, right? Is if
yes.
You try to throw all these different looks and you try to switch things up, it's if it doesn't work, then there are some really nice opportunities for the offense.
Yes, 100%. And that's why I'm going to be fascinated to see how quickly they are able to get to all this multiplicity that Clint Hurt is talking about. I would be surprised if they are able to, from the jump, be able to get into all these different exotic looks and pressures and zone coverages and all those different things, because it takes time. It's not just that you're, you know, entering a new scheme, but everyone's got to get on the same page. You're dealing with a lot of young players, right? And so it's going to take a lot of work. And as Clint Hurt said, it's not just the time that you spend together in the building. It's what you do outside of it as well. The studying that you do on your own, the studying that you do together, that's going to really make the difference and speed up the developmental process or slow it down, right? Could take vice versa. Mm-hmm. And I want to get a little bit deeper here real quick. The reason why multiplicity, when he talks about it, what does that mean? It just means that you can do a lot of different things out of the same look. And so what that requires is that requires everyone on your defense to really be flexible in terms of doing other people's jobs. So let's say, for example, if, you know, in the defensive scheme that they had in the past, a 4-3 scheme, you had, you know, I'm just going to give you names so you can
visually
see it.
Yeah, start with the look that you're starting with.
So Bruce Irvin is down on the line of scrimmage, right? You have your linebacker shifted. Bruce Irvin's down on the line of scrimmage on one end, and you have, let's just say, most recently, Carlos Dunlap, you know, on the other side at the other end. Well, Bruce Irvin is the outside linebacker in this defensive look. He is the one that is more apt and more versatile to be able to rush, to be able to set the edge in the run game, and to also drop back into zone coverage. Carlos Dunlap, what is he good for? Rushing the passer and playing run defense and not necessarily being able to drop back into coverage. And when you're doing it, you're making your coverage very, you know, you're putting a liability back there in coverage. Well, now with their defensive schemes, they're asking both sides to be able to be just as versatile, just as good at both things. Same thing with your safety. Same thing with your linebackers. You're asking everyone to be able to play multiple roles and to be flexible and smart and athletic enough to be able to do all that. So it takes a lot. But within that scheme and within that system, if you can find those the right personnel to be able to execute it, that's where you can put a lot of confusion on the quarterback and on the offense and really keep things simple and easy for the defense. It's just the look that you're presenting to the offense that makes them have to think more. So that is the whole goal and idea behind this, and hopefully, you know, they will be able to execute that at a high level from the get-go.
All right, that is the latest from new Seahawks defensive coordinator Clint Hurt, who spoke with reporters from OTAs yesterday. This or that is how we're wrapping up the show today. It comes your way next. You can send your suggestions in if you want them for this or that to 206-421-3776. Don't go anywhere.
Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle's Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
All right. Now, we do a couple variations of closing out the show with some different games. We have What I Need to Know, all kinds of stuff. We're ending today with This or That, brought to you by Allred Heating and Electric. You can send your suggestions in 206-421-3776, T-O-T, This or That. 80 plus,
T-O-T.
80 plus degrees and sunny, or 30 degrees and snowy. How is this even a discussion? I'll take 82 and
Stacy,
sunny 10 times out of 10.
She is such a liar. She is such a liar.
No, we're not talking about 95 degrees, 100 degrees. We're talking about 80 degrees. That's nothing. My house is like 76
Stacy,
degrees right now.
When we were at training camp last year,
yeah,
you complained every day the temperature was above 70.
No, it was not. Stacy, it was like 70, 75.
No, it was. First of all, there was no wind, no breeze whatsoever. Secondly, we are on
the
VMAC,
like
tarmac
degrees.
Thing, where it's like a microwave. The heat comes up from the bottom. Thirdly,
everyone else
was complaining about it, too. Bob was complaining about it. Wyman was complaining about it.
Bob complains about literally everything. He lives closer than most people to the station and complains more about the traffic than anybody I know.
I am just saying 80 degrees and sunny is a beautiful day. I think it would be a tougher decision if it was like 98 degrees or 30 degrees. This or that.
You are such a liar.
In fact, I'm changing the question.
Stacy is such a liar right now.
98 degrees or 30 degrees?
I would take 90 degrees and you would take 30 degrees. Just admit it. Admit it.
Just admit it, Stacy.
No, no, absolutely not. I would never, ever, ever, ever do that. No, I would not
think
take
about all
degrees.
Your outfits you get to wear in 30 degrees. Remember last year?
Curtis.
When the temperature was changing from like summer to fall, you dressed up in like this huge like outfit.
Yeah.
And it was still like
outfit.
65 outside.
Well, yeah,
Jake and I
were
both like,
all right,
Stacy, you're going
to
like You're going to pass out from
I did not expect a simple question like this to turn into such controversy, and I just I have to tell the people that Stacey is lying so hard right now because she doesn't want to seem like the one person that doesn't enjoy the sunshine.
That's not true.
Yes, it is.
This
Stacey,
or that.
You would melt in 90-degree weather.
She doesn't want to be tell everyone about it. Even though she...
In 90-degree weather, yes. 80-degree weather,
and you would prefer that?
Difference.
And you would prefer that?
Would I prefer 90 or 30? I would prefer 30 if I could wear the outfits I wanted.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for admitting
this. Or that TOT, winning on a goal line stand or goal line touchdown. I will say, listen.
Okay.
I will say this. I still remember it because of this. It was the Rams Seahawks game at St. Louis at the time with the goal line stand on all four downs for the Seahawks defense. I still remember it.
Yeah, I think goal line stands are way more memorable. Also, remember the game against the Patriots 2 years ago where they had the goal line stand and who was the savior
it's like,
of the day?
Delano Hill and LJ Collier.
Yes!
Yeah.
Delano Hill and LJ Collier.
Yeah.
And it was bananas. I would take goal line stand. Winning on a goal line stand is definitely more thrilling than a goal line touchdown. Both are insane and awesome, but goal line stand takes the game.
The other goal line stand that I remember the Seahawks had was the Sunday night game against the Patriots. Not the Cam Newton game, but the game in Foxborough the year after Super Bowl 49, where I believe it was Cam Chancellor broke up a pass intended for Rob Gronkowski in the end zone. That was the CJ or the CJ ProSize game.
Oh,
he ran for like 180 yards that night.
Oh,
against
man.
Indy?
No, against New England.
Against New England. Monday Night Football.
Good game he had against Indy. Or is it
Monday Night Football or Sunday Night
Football?
I think
it was Sunday Night
Football. Yeah. This or that, TOT, chips and salsa or breadsticks? Chips and salsa.
Chips and salsa.
Chips and salsa. It's close. I love bread, and I love breadsticks.
You guys don't understand. This is really hard for me. I'm taking breadsticks.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
Look,
yes,
I'm not mad at you
I am taking breadsticks.
Breadsticks.
I am taking breadsticks. And if you could give me, go to Olive Garden, have their breadsticks, and also add the Alfredo sauce to that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh,
I'm still taking chips and salsa, though.
I absolutely am taking chips and salsa 10
Whatever.
Times out of 10.
Whatever.
Maybe 9 times out of 10.
And the one upside of chips and salsa is, like, it's very hard to get full on chips and salsa. Whereas, like, breadsticks and Alfredo, like, you're taking your dinner, it shows up, and you're like, can I get the box, please?
Right away. This or that from a listener, having DK Metcalf run you down or try to tackle Marshawn Lynch.
DK Metcalf run me down. That's
yes,
not even
absolutely.
Like
no, it's
I wouldn't
not even.
Even
close.
Why would I want to try to tackle
Curtis,
Marshawn Lynch? No, thank you.
DK Metcalf is so much faster and stronger than all of us.
No. What I'm looking at. No, I'm looking at it as impact is made in both cases.
Yes.
DK
yes.
Metcalf
you
tackling
bounce
me.
Off of Marshawn Lynch.
No, I think Marshawn Lynch would quite
if
literally
DK
run
Metcalf
me
DK Metcalf tackles
over.
You. You're getting a concussion. You're breaking a rib.
No, you're doing. You're going head to head with Marshawn Lynch.
I just don't want to be
hole.
That guy. That,
versus,
yeah, no.
Would you
you're
rather
running.
Tackle a lion or be tackled by a lion? That's what we're talking about.
Yeah,
here.
But Marshawn
you
Lynch.
You'd rather tackle
listen,
a lion.
Trying to tackle Marshawn Lynch is
but Curtis,
being tackled
you
by
can't
Marshawn
go
Lynch.
Ankles. You can't try to go at the ankles.
No.
You have to go right at his midsection.
He is going to run you over like a treadmill.
I don't think you
Except
guys
for brain
are,
damage. I do.
I don't
yes.
think you guys are understanding the magnitude of DK Metcalf's
I
athleticism.
Am.
I absolutely am. I think DK. First of all,
Stacey,
first of all,
if DK Metcalf tackled you, you would be dead.
If I had
if you
a,
tried
no,
to
listen,
tackle
listen,
Marshawn
listen,
Lynch,
listen.
You live.
If
but
I
DK,
had a 60-yard
no,
head start on DK Metcalf.
Curtis,
could I run the remaining 40 yards without him catching me?
I am running straight at Marshawn Lynch like this, taking him head on. DK Metcalf is chasing you down from behind and jumping on you and tackling you. That is less impact.
No.
Yes.
It's not. It's...
It is.
This or that. More thrilling. Curtis, did you write this? Bunting or successful hit and run?
No, I did not write
I
that.
Did, because this is for all the small ball fans out there. This question just gets them going. This is the question for all the small ball fans
oh,
out
man.
There. What is more thrilling
I'm
to
going
watch?
Successful hit and run.
Oh. Yeah, I'm gonna go with literally.
It never
almost
happens.
Anything.
It never happens.
Over a
Ever.
Bunt, I might go with a really cool F8 all the way to the wall.
I am saying
over
a successful bunt. Oh, man, there's nothing more thrilling. There's nothing more thrilling than a successful bunt, especially in today's baseball. Because you want to know why? Because then you can hear like a million people, old school baseball fans going, why don't you just do that every time? Just bunt it.
Yeah.
Right? Hit, run. How many times have you seen a successful hit and run?
Not often.
It rarely ever happens. Rarely ever.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the time they ruin it, right? Most of the time the batter ends up ruining the hit and run.
From the 253, last this or that today. This or that, grand slam or a Hail Mary?
I mean, grand slam.
Well, but I want you to pretend that both are in big moments. So it's not just a regular season Hail Mary. I want to add some weight to the Hail Mary. I'm talking Super Bowl Hail Mary.
Okay.
Or World Series grand slam.
World Series grand slam.
Game 7.
Game 7, World Series grand slam.
In like the bottom of the 11th.
Yeah, that Stacey's getting herself all fired up over here.
Let's go.
I mean, grand slam to me over a Hail Mary. I just, everything about that is way cooler
Curtis,
than a Hail Mary.
Curtis, I already know you're going to say grand slam. Are you?
Well,
are you?
A Hail Mary.
We're talking a little Kyler
Murray to Hopkins.
A Hail Mary
wins the game. A Hail Mary always wins the game, right?
Yeah, yes.
I'm taking Hail Mary. Grand slam can happen in a losing effort.
I am taking a grand slam and a winning, a walk-off grand slam.
Oh.
Or a
well,
Hail
we're
Mary
talking walk-off.
Yeah, that's what I thought we were talking about.
I'll go walk-off grand slam. Walk-off grand slam.
We're talking grand slam in the second inning.
Listen. What if the Hail Mary is like 50 air yards?
Oh, I mean, it's pretty majestic.
It is majestic.
I'm talking like Aaron Rodgers with his best deep ball. And the Hail Mary isn't even close. Like, you see someone reach up and catch it with both hands. And there's a great photo afterwards on the cover.
It is thrilling. A Hail Mary is thrilling, but everything about the grand slam, I mean, and especially if it is not like some weak little shot over the fence.
Right.
I'm talking like a monster shot for a grand slam.
We're going to be
talking
about
it. And you're watching that thing. You know it's gone. That's
Jake's going to be
amazing.
Talking about this one for a while. We have to go, though. It's been Jake and Stacey on Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Wyman and Bob coming your way next.